Welcome to the PPC show. I am Paul Wicker.
I'm JD Prater.
And today is April 27th, and these are your top headlines in marketing. The big headline is that AdStage has been acquired, and we are now a member of TapClix.
Wow.
Yeah. Big news.
Dang.
Let's just mic drop it and end the podcast now.
Well, congrats.
Thank you. It was a lot of... It was very interesting. I've never been through an acquisition where I was like this close to it. You know, usually I was just a peon in such a giant multi-billion dollar organization, and like you get an email like, we've been acquired, and you're like, cool. But this was not that at all. This was like thousands of meetings with all these different companies. It was really, I learned a ton, and it's the folks over there have been really great. So, and the press went live on, I don't know, last week.
Yeah.
And we've been, you know, we've been working there for a few weeks. I don't know if you know how press works, but it's not actually the first day.
Dang. You mean it doesn't just like flip over like that?
Right.
The press release goes live. That's actually your first day?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure big companies maybe there's like something where they announce it, but we, you know, no one cares that much about us. So, but yeah, so big news. So now TapClix employee. So I guess this is brought to you by TapClix right now. We'll figure out the future of the podcast at some
Interesting.
Point.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been on a tear. I mean, I remember, you know, again, I used to work at AdStage, and they were definitely a competitor, as we all know. But they've also acquired Report Garden too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Folded
and Raven
them right
Tools,
in.
If Raven you remember Tools? Raven Tools, yeah. Like it was kind of a SEO, it was kind of like a competitor to SEMrush and Moz. But they had a bunch of reporting too, so it was kind of reporting. Yeah, it's part of their strategy, if you can't tell. Gobble up a lot of the folks in a similar space. You know, they focus more on scale. So they have a lot of customers that have like thousands and thousands of ad accounts or thousands of customers. So sometimes they have like media companies or agencies, and they have like tons of customers. So they solve challenges that we didn't really focus on that much at AdStage, and where we did more of like automation, budget pacing, you know, the last few features around budget pacing and trying to do like insights and recommendations. And we have the benchmark report for like benchmark data. So we're going to continue to work more in what's being called the marketing intelligence section and not do all the kind of report visualization stuff as much, since they already have like a giant team working on like new widgets. But I think for most of our customers, they'll continue to not even notice the difference. At some point, we'll like be able to probably give them access to the other tools. So yeah, pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it, man. I mean, that sounds like the press went live. So I'm guessing that's what you had to deal with all weekend then, right? It was just the amount of press coming your way on the Twitter.
Yeah, you can imagine they're like in my backyard right now. The helicopter's overhead. It's been oppressive, but a lot of good conversations. No, and what's interesting is they are based down in San Jose, and we are AdStage team is all based in the Bay Area up by San Francisco. But because of COVID, we were all working from home. So at first there was a bit of a, you know, because we're going to work from home. No, nobody wants to commute down to San Jose from up here. As you know,
that's down far
out of Santa Cruz. It would be a hike. And then all of a sudden COVID happened while we were having these conversations. And it was like, actually, the team's working really well remotely. So we're thinking maybe a satellite office. Like our lease is up in June or July. So we could renew it if we want. And if the world is getting back to work by then, if not, we just stay home and then maybe do whatever remains from the ashes of WeWork, whatever company's left. I don't know if they're out of business yet, but maybe see about getting a temporary space. But yeah, so it's been a lot of fun doing all that. But it's also nice to get kind of back to work, because it's a lot of meetings about stuff that has nothing to do with building product. So it's good to be back.
Yeah. All right. So
while we're bantering, the key portion of every episode, I started telling people about books, and I really want to tell you about the book I'm reading because it's kind of crazy, and I'll keep it short. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it's Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, jeez.
By Ayn Rand. I think you pronounce it.
Never heard of it. yeah, okay.
So a lot of people had to read Anthem in high school.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Anthem, yeah. But even Atlas Shrugged is like you know, it's dense.
Oh, Atlas Shrugged is a very
4,000 pages.
And it has like tiny little print. I didn't realize it was like one of those books famous for being long. You know, I read War and Peace because people always used to make a joke about books if it was, you know, like a, I read a lot of big books. And they'd be like, what is that, War and Peace? And I finally could say, yes, yes it is. This is literally War and Peace and I'm reading it. So that was literally, I just wanted to see like, what is it about War and Peace? Which is a phenomenal book for the record and like got me totally into Russian literature. But beside the point, I knew nothing about Atlas Shrugged other than like conservatives and right wingers like love it, and I'm about 40% in, and it's like a decent story, but it is like the worst propaganda from like the turn of the past century, you know, like the early 1900s, and like the it's kind of like it starts the worship of founders, like the founder worship culture in the Bay Area. It's like the same, except it's like, you know, the steel magnate worship, and it's just so ridiculous that it frustrates me when I read it. I don't know if I could finish it. Literally, it's like,
don't do it.
I don't know if I could finish it.
Watch the really crappy movie.
Is there a crappy movie?
Yeah, it's like recent too, like wow. Probably like in the last like 5 to 10 years maybe.
Right.
I'll throw in my book review. I'm working on Saltwater Buddha. It's about a surfer and how he finds like Buddhism, right? And he spends some time in Santa Cruz. So I just got done about him. He's spending some time right now in Santa Cruz surfing right where I surf and dealing with the localism. And I was like, yes, nice. I've been there.
I'm just glad you're reading.
No, I'm reading. You know, I always have like a fun book. But then I also have, and then I kind of like pick and choose through like business books just to like find the nuggets and kind of move on.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. I think last time I asked you, you were like, I'm not reading anything.
Well, that was like a month ago. It was like COVID in your face. And I was just trying to like avoid everything, frantically scrambling to keep up with my life. But now I'm settled. We've been 6 weeks in. I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. let's do some headlines.
Number one on the list was TapClicks acquiring AdSage. Cover that one. TechCrunch also wrote about Google extending identity verifications. So I look for this. It's not quite out yet. They said in the summer. But when you see an ad in Google, there's a little drop down. Today you can click, and I think it says like more info or something like that, and it tells you a little bit about like why you've been targeted by the ad. They're going to add another option that says who's the advertiser, and they're doing it for political ads. Already, but now they're expanding it to all ads. So come summer, you'll be able to go to any ad in Google, do that little drop down, and see who's actually advertising, which I think is great.
Yeah, I like this one. I'm like really surprised that Google is doing this. But I think part of that is just like consumers are demanding more transparency, right? I mean, if we flex on the company, right? The companies. Well, listen, I think for the most part, I think most of the time Google wants to be on the right side of history. And I think they've got a lot of smart people there. And then I think at the end of the day, this is three clicks away and no one's going to do it. So
it is deep. Yeah. You got to get in there. Because I was at first, you know, I just read the headline and then I was like looking for it on the end. I couldn't find it. And then I realized it's not even out yet, but I saw where it was going to be. And you're right. But I mean, they should just put it right on the ad, which would be interesting, you know, advertisement buy. Yeah. But, you know, I think of all those people who misrepresent themselves to try to be like, make it seem like they're the official ad for another brand. And I, you know, this used to happen a lot. And there used to be all these like trademark, I don't even remember anymore, from my days running AdWords campaigns with all the like, the form you used to have to submit, so you can like run keywords and ads that have a certain trademark so that like you have the right to mention BMW in your ad. And it was like this whole nightmare trying to get like your ads approved. And it was one of those great ad disapproval reasons that would always pop up like, oh, it'd be trademark. I'm forgetting the actual term, what it's called, like trademark something. But this would be, you know, this seems like a very useful tool if you're going to click on an ad and you're like, wait, is this really, you know, Walgreens, or is this CVS running a Walgreens ad to try to get me to CVS? Mm. Yeah. Speaking of CVS, since Walgreens stealing all their traffic, They've decided to launch an ad network. So in DigiDay, they reported that CVS is going to launch this ad network, which sounds kind of like an ad network. They have inventory in CVS.com, which definitely is a real thing. You know, I'm sure they get tons of traffic and probably get a ton of really qualified traffic. But then they're taking it and kind of backfilling it with quote-unquote ad placements that include display and search offsite placements on Google, Facebook, and Instagram. So
that's funny.
Yeah. So you want to buy some CVS inventory, and then they'll just throw in some Google inventory. And they're saying, well, they'll use the CVS data to target the Google inventory to try to make it sound like you're not just paying them to buy the same inventory from Google you could go buy. But it does make sense. I've seen a lot of people do this back when I was in the Yellow Page space. You'd essentially tell plumbers, like, hey, you don't want to go buy ads on Google. Let us buy ads on Google for you that say, like, top plumbers in Pennsylvania. And then we'll put you in the landing page with the top five plumbers. And it's, like, better traffic because, you know, we're a Yellow Page company. And people know that's where you find business listing information. It's kind of the same. CVS is saying, well, we're going to put the CVS brand behind your product when we advertise it on Google, maybe. So I could see that pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, right? Anytime you see these big companies starting to do ads, I'm just like, why? You know what I mean? Like, ads. Like, don't we already have enough ads, right? And so to be able to do it, but I think what they're realizing is, like, we have this amazing first-party data through our loyalty program. So we're going to be able to give you, like, really great reporting. We're going to be able to close the loop on anything, right? If you saw this ad and then you bought some toilet paper, right, because of this ad. I get it. How much money do you think this is? I mean, like, how big of an industry is this actually going to be, or how much revenue can CVS actually get from this? I think that's where I'm a little unsure,
right?
Because you have to do so many ad buys as it is, and all your money is going to Google, Facebook. Are you really going to go give some money over here to CVS? I just don't know.
Right. I mean, I could see if you are like an over-the-counter medication, or I don't even know if you can advertise that. Or maybe that is it. Like, the things you can advertise on Google and Facebook because it is over-the-counter, or maybe, I don't know, some other, like, alcohol. They sell alcohol at some of the CVS, some Walgreens out here. So maybe it's a way for people who struggle on those to advertise. Yeah. And they do have a lot of inventory. And if you think about it, like, retailers have been selling space in their stores for a long time. And Little Jude is on the podcast as well. Tell us about the end caps that you can buy at the CVS retail physical stores and how that translates to this digital version.
I don't know. I mean, so it's still like in beta or whatever. You can't really get in. It'd be the only thing I would actually like throw out too. It's like it's all managed services. So you gotta. There's no like link. I don't know. I guess maybe you can go do a quick search and to find how you can get into this. But
yeah, it sounds like you have to talk to a salesperson,
which is your typical what you see when you first get started.
And it's called the CVS Media Exchange, the CMX. And add this to the list. You can now advertise products on Amazon, on Walmart, on Target, on Instacart, now CVS. So the good thing is for data and optimization and reporting companies and attribution companies, as the world gets more complex, it becomes harder to figure out where to spend your marketing dollars. So this is good for software companies like me.
Integrate, Paul. You know, right. You got to be reaching out. Let's see it.
CVS.
There's some other things too that I thought was really interesting. They are a managed service. They're going to be able to help you with creative and strategy, and they have a dynamic credit offering, which is something
expensive.
You don't typically see outside of the gate. You know, but you think about in store and also offline, and you'd be able to tie all that together. I don't know. I'm interested. It also makes me less likely to use my loyalty card. You know, when they ask you at the end, do you have a loyalty card?
Right.
And I'm like, no.
It is funny how they are like the only ones that still do that. We're like, you got to punch in your phone number. I shouldn't say the only ones. There's like a few old retailers that used to be cutting edge with their loyalty database. And now it's like, do I have to punch in my number every time? Then it's the wrong one and I got to wait and the people behind me are grumpy. Like, Dude, the credit card I use is the same one. Like, Square's figured out how to just remember me by my credit card. You can't.
Seriously. And I get to save $1.30 and you can make $10 off of that. Thank you.
Right. Rarely do I save anything. They're always like, do you want to enter your thing? And I'm like, I'm buying like $1.07 for like tape or something. Like, anyway, but if I'm Frito-Lay, if I'm like a huge retailer, then that's probably a good place to throw some money and see what sticks.
I can see that.
Speaking of new ad networks, so that's in the retail side, also in the media side. So Peacock, coming soon. NBC is launching Peacock. I mean, talk about their timing being terrible. Wouldn't it be nice to be live during the largest boom in online streaming in the history of the world? Whoops, missed that one.
Missed it. I mean, but to be fair, I mean, Quibi came out and people are like, what's a Quibi? I'm out. Like, what is this? I don't see them doing well. Peacock, the only reason they've got like The Office, you know, they're bringing The Office back in. So they've got a couple of really good shows that are probably entice some people. But at the same time, I mean, you're going to have fatigue, right? I mean, you can only have so many networks and be able to, like, that's where Netflix was so good, is you could just go to Netflix and see everything, right?
Right.
Man, that's a tough one. But now they have, I like this one with NBCU, the checkout system, in an effort to bring advertising growth by building on an existing broadcast and digital properties. It's like, what?
I have no idea what it means. I had to read the article twice, and I still don't know what the product is.
I was lost. I like shoppable TV, though.
Well, so last year they introduced that.
Let's make fun of this.
I mean, I'm sure there's thousands of people scanning QR codes on your television to buy products.
What?
Yeah. So they launched that last year. Shockingly, no one's using it. And now with Peacock launching soon, they're saying, hey, we're also going to have this vague direct-to-consumer capability that lets you, like, sell stuff. I don't know exactly how, but somehow you're going to buy crap on your television through the Peacock streaming service. And if you have Comcast Xfinity, you'll be one of the first ones, which gets an early preview of Peacock. But the streaming space is crazy. Like you said, how many streaming services will people sign up for is the question. And when you're competing with like Disney and Apple, you know, that's tough.
Yeah.
So no Quibi for you?
No Quibi.
The name is annoying.
Yeah, well, I think it's annoying. I think that they, like, what was it, like, they raised, like, $4 billion, you know? It's like, and this is what you, like, this is what, this is, right. This? Come on.
I've only seen a few ads for a few shows, a few Quibis. So I think they're taking the opposite approach of, like, Netflix, Amazon, which is kind of the volume game, create as much content as possible. You know, on our favorite podcast, that isn't this one, Pivot, they talked about essentially in Europe, they're like building these really cheap production houses to make a bunch of shows and then reshoot the same show in multiple languages with multiple groups of characters, like from that country. So you like shoot it in Polish with a Polish cast, then you bring in some Russians, shoot it in Russian, then you bring in some German, shoot it in Germany or in German for Germany. So that you can really like maximize the efficiency of shooting a show, but still make it feel like it's, you know, a show for your own market. So meanwhile, you have Netflix and Amazon going that route. And then you have, you know, Quibi coming out and saying, we're going to hire the most expensive executive producer and the best actor. Similar to Apple when they spent like, I forget how much money on The Morning Show, which was their like big show, which I don't know how it's doing. I don't really follow the streaming numbers super well, but we'll see which method wins. So like high quality content, high production cost, you know, exclusive route or the kind of mass market. It's not that great, but who cares? Like 1 out of 1,000 is a hit. So it's a numbers game. Let's make 10,000 and we'll get 10 hits. yeah, that's where you really find out. Are these people that good or are they just that lucky? Although you do see the, like when the same director, producer just pump out hit after hit after hit. You got to admit there's some talent there.
Yeah, for sure.
Facebook reported earnings, or it will be reporting earnings on Wednesday, and Snap just did report earnings. They had kind of opposite Snap is did really well. Their numbers, I have them at the bottom here. Up 44 revenues up 44% from last year to 462 million DAUs, daily active users, up 20% to 229 million. First ever quarter with positive operating cash flow.
Wow.
So they checked all three boxes, grew revenue, grew users, and got to positive margin. So good job, Snap. And then on the flip side, Facebook saying, hey, everyone, be prepared for some terrible numbers. COVID's really affected us. So don't expect much in our numbers on Wednesday.
Yeah. So they're roughly, it looks like shares closed higher on Friday, 190. So they're at 190. They're going to report on Wednesday. What do you think? Up or down? And how much?
You know, it's always tricky because the market's not stupid. Well, it's stupid in some ways, but they've already factored this into the cost, right?
Correct.
So, you know, Facebook already came out and said, hey, numbers are going to be down. Everybody already knew numbers are going to be down. So it's not like people are going to be like shocked, at least institutional investors. I don't know how, maybe there's a lot of retail investors that kind of just day trade Facebook. You end up with a lot of volatility based on the news cycle. So I'm thinking out loud. I think the stock will go down slightly. I say 185 or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Cuz like you said, you know, there's already been a lot of discussion around like, oh, they're going to be down 15%. Some are like, no, they're going to be down 30%. So, right. I still think they're going to hover just under the $200 mark for the rest of the year.
And there is kind of a reopening the economy vibe that's going around too, so I think a lot of the people that were saying, you know, we don't know when the end is near, is starting to see other countries reopen. Obviously, other countries that had a much better executed COVID preparation and triage plan than us. Oh, sorry, it's real windy in here. The doors are closing by themselves.
Whoa. Ghosts. Yeah.
Right. But I think because of that, that's like a positive for the market as people see, oh, maybe it's going to be June, maybe it's July, maybe it's August, but it's not an indefinite amount of time. People will feel better.
Yeah. But this is bleeds right into the e-marketer, you know, with social right. media CPMs being down. You know, one agency was saying that their CPM ad pricing fell as much as 50% in March. I don't know. I mean, I know that they're down. I completely get it. I mean, part of that is because they're having so much usage at the same time, right? That, I mean, yeah, a lot of impressions, then advertisers leave, right? And so that leaves this big, you know, kind of gap. And so CPMs drop, supply and demand. But at the same time, man, I hear all these D2C people are like right back in it and they're seeing great numbers because people on Instagram and Facebook are bored and they're like willing to buy shit now because they're no longer
right.
You can't get it locally. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't go to the,
it's almost like retail therapy, you know,
can't go to the mall and hang out on the corner. Yeah, it's crazy though. So many people have paused their budgets and there's no like getting around the fact that sales pipelines have like dried up. I don't know if we talked about the HubSpot article.
Yeah.
Last week we did. Yeah. That, you know,
oh,
sales
I did.
Pipelines.
I read it. Yeah. Right. I read right. the article. Yes. It was a good article.
I don't know if we talked about it. HubSpot put out numbers for like how many, you know, they basically have like a Salesforce type product, which shows you how many like deals are in your pipeline. And they also can see how many like meetings people are booking and how many forms get submitted. And basically like all sales pipeline is just went off a cliff. And you know, from all the friends I have that are either running companies and have pipeline or in sales, they're all like, yeah, we're literally just kind of sitting around waiting for this to be over. Nobody wants to buy anything. You know, nobody wants to take risks. Nobody wants to install anything new. Then there's this counter theme of like people are trying to make their operation more efficient because they have downtime. So they're like thinking of moving to new tools, but I haven't seen it materialize. I haven't seen anyone really like outside of, you know, Zoom and Slack. And, you know, so if you're like a tool that has become the industry leader, I'm seeing a lot of people adopt those tools.
Yeah, agreed. So. Agreed. Yeah. I mean, the Asanas, you know, it's like all the productivity tools that you already know are the ones right. that are going to win, right? It's kind of hard to get in front of a new audience with something they haven't heard of. I mean, that's always a challenge, but it's like, oh, I've already heard of this, right? So I actually right. think like word of mouth is the biggest thing that's happening right now, even though it's word of mouth on social media, right? Because right. we're not talking to each other, right?
Right. Word of digital mouth.
Yeah, so maybe it's your brand advocates, right? And of course, the media and the press are hyping that up as well. But yeah, right. I'm with you.
And so the numbers are down, according to eMarketer. Numbers are down anywhere from 25% in paid search, all the way down to -35% for digital audio or podcasts. Which it's surprising that paid search is the most resilient, and things like video, display, and audio have been the least resilient. You know, I would think now is the time you're going to do video, display, and audio because people aren't searching with intent on paid search. But according to eMarketer, at least, that's the numbers for March. That was the 2020 March change. And they're predicting this is going to kind of last until at least June.
I get the pausing of the budgets. I just think we're coming out of some of this, right? I mean, this is just me anecdotally. It's like, I think the worst of this is kind of like, and now we're kind of adapted to the news and all like what's happening, the shelter in place, or maybe you're opening up if you're in like Georgia or something. But like, I think it's, you're kind of used to the news now. You're used to where maybe you're working from home or, you know, I understand there's a lot of people that don't have jobs as well, but at the same time, I could totally see us kind of picking back up and getting back to this kind of normal. I think the reason for the pausing of the budgets is like the deal cycle. So it's just really, I could see like B2B being hurt the most of like, I'm a huge business. Do I need to buy this other huge business product right now? You know, and then the CFO is like, let's pause. Hold on. No approvals just yet. Let's see. Can we make sure everyone's paying their bills first?
Right. And that's a good point that, like, even if, you know, let's say there is a second spike or whatever, and in the fall, I think everybody knows, like, oh, we can cope. So, like, you know, we're still buying food. We're still spending on, you know, things for the house. We're still buying clothes online. So, like, there is still an economy, even if it's an at-home economy. The money, I think we talked about it this many months, or at least many weeks ago. Like, will the money that shifted out of restaurants go all into grocery stores? So the economy is still going to have that same budget. It's just going to move. You know, for the restaurants, it's really unfortunate. For all the local grocers, it's really fortunate. You know, are there winners and losers that kind of offset each other in the economy? And then when we start going back outside again, it will kind of switch back. So as opposed to, like, people go home and just hoard, not hoard in a negative way, but, you know, they conserve because they're nervous. And obviously, if you don't have a job and unemployment, I haven't seen the new numbers, but I've heard projections of like 11 to 15% it's going to be this quarter, something like that. So, you know, 15 out of every 100 people don't have a job. So they obviously don't go home and say, hey, let's keep buying crap on Instagram. At least I hope they don't. They shouldn't. They should be saving their money. But assuming that turns around, or I guess even if it doesn't, that's the question. Can the economy still thrive with 15% unemployment? I'm not an economist, so I have no idea. It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, same. I have no idea.
Okay, so that was those numbers. So I think there's just one other one to touch on is, two more. Twitter. So this is just, last week I was talking about gaming and how it's a huge industry. And here's another article proving you need to go understand the gaming market. According to Social Media Today, gaming is set to become a $196 billion market by 2022. And five of the top 10 channels on YouTube were directly connected to the gaming community when they looked back at all of 2019. So gaming is a huge segment, and there's a lot of really creative ways to get your brand exposed in those communities. There was one example, which I don't play Fortnite. I've seen people play Fortnite. I guess I don't even know who it was. My nephew, maybe on like Twitch, I saw some people play Fortnite, so I knew what it was. But there's an artist who like released his new video by like being a character in the game real time, releasing it. And as people are like playing games of Fortnite, like he's like this 1,000-foot statue of himself in the middle. It's this weird immersive experience. And it's starting to feel like VR is kind of here. You don't have a little headset on, but you know, if you stare at your computer screen close enough, it's like you're in the game.
I mean, it's huge. Like I'm really surprised by some of these, you know, some of these are hard to understand too. Like, I didn't see where they defined some of their, I didn't see it. They didn't really define it. But like, you know, 1.2 billion tweets about video games in 2019, like that's a lot. yeah, I get it. But the one I didn't understand was, like, there's a 71% increase in conversation volume, 38% increase in unique authors, which, you know, okay.
Yeah, and that's in the second half of March. So that's, like, in addition to gaming growing, like, COVID, obviously everybody's hobby, if people had outdoors hobbies, they're pretty much canceled. So there's just a lot more people playing video games.
And talking about it on Twitter, which, again, surprised about.
It is true. It feels like Twitter is like just marketers and politicos. Like, who else is on Twitter?
Bunch of VCs, you know, them as well.
True. Yeah. True. VCs, marketers. There's some sports folks. So yeah, gaming. I always pictured that as more of like a Twitch, Discord,
Reddit. Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess there is a, well, clearly 1.2 billion tweets, just about video games. So yeah. So if you have a way to get in on the gaming scene now. Gaming, especially esports, if you're thinking about it, go pay for some inventory somehow with the next esports thing. I guarantee there's like an event happening this week and next week that you could go sponsor, and it will open you up to a whole new audience, assuming you want an audience under 30. But and then the last, speaking of audience under 30, Snapchat. So they have a new ad type called First Commercial. So now you can be the first commercial any user sees within the first Snap show they watch that day. So it's kind of like the first time you get on Snapchat for the day, you're the first impression that they see. Someone else did something like this.
Twitter has like, you're an explorer, you know, you can be that first ad unit, mostly movies.
Yeah, it's always great for premieres, movie premieres.
First ad of the day. I like the idea, but do you really want to be someone's first ad of the day? You know, when you think about intent, when you think about realistically, like probably 95% of Americans, you wake up probably because your phone has an alarm, and then you stare at your phone for the next 30 minutes before you actually get out of bed. You know, do you want that to be the first thing, you know, in the ad? I don't know. It's a tough one. You think, I don't know. I don't know if the intent's there, the awareness, if I'm going to remember. Because I remember, again, running lots of Facebook ads. Most of my conversions happened in the evening, not in the morning.
Right.
Anyway, but, you know, for brand awareness, yeah, maybe. Maybe. I just wonder what the recall is.
Yeah, I'm looking at the article to see if there's any data about why. Like why that first impression is so important in their view, like what's the pitch? Because obviously there's just the ego pitch of like, you know,
sure,
you're the first brand they see, and maybe there's some studies that show like it's more memorable if you're the first. It's kind of like buying first position on Google search. Like, it doesn't really make sense, but it just, your ego is like, I'm number one.
Hey, JD, I kept searching around for these keywords. I noticed that we were number two and number three. What's it going to take to get to number one?
Right.
That's every agency, everyone that's ever managed an ad account. That's their boss. It's their client. It's literally everyone. Stop searching.
And then at some point, you give up and you say, okay, we'll go to first position. It's going to cost us $23 a click, but we're going to get that first position. Google did the same thing. Like, remember Google rolled out all these, like, there's bidding options for, so you can do first place bid. There's, I think they got rid of them recently.
Yeah.
If I remember right.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But, well, because they moved away from, like, you know, the top and right-hand side. And when they did that, they made some changes. But I remember when they first rolled out all those different ways that you could essentially bid to position. Because folks, like when I was at Kenshu a decade ago, it was like our number one bid rule for the local market for SMBs was bid to position. And you'd be like, position three. That's what everyone did. I don't want to pay for one or two, but I want to be in the top.
That's right.
So if I can be in the top three, like the top two get you up there all the time, but they were expensive. So like three, because sometimes you'll be there.
Three was always good too. It's always like, I want that discerning user.
Well, it's just so much cheaper than one and two, but you could still sometimes be at the top. So it was like, because remember they used to show two or three at the top, depending on device, screen size, all that stuff. But those are all the headlines, believe it or not, that we have in this week. So you could still head over to blog.adsage.io. All our stuff's still running. We might move it over to the TapClicks. I don't even know what'll happen. But for now, you can head over to blog.adsage.io and sign up to get the newsletter from AdStage. So enjoy your week, everybody.
See ya.